Welcome to the podcast. It's dedicated to making you a faster cyclist. The Ask a Cycling Coach podcast presented by Trainer Road. I'm Coach Jonathan Lee with our head coach, Chad Timmerman.
Hi, everybody.
And our CEO, Nate Pearson.
Hello.
And we are going to answer more of your cycling and triathlon or coaching related questions today. And you can submit them to us at trainerroad.com/podcast. You can find all that info there. So before we get into their questions, though, we should talk about cyclocross. My season has gone off the rails after doing Hunt 6, that really long ride. I've been the Everest challenge. Yeah, the Everesting ride that we did. So that was, for those that don't know, you can listen a few episodes back. It was 222 miles and we climbed 32,000 feet. And my knees, they didn't like that. So I've been doing rehab instead of, and I missed the last cross race, the local cross race that I was going to be able to do this weekend, which is
a
bummer.
How many days a week are you going to like PT?
Yeah, I'm going 2 days a week. And then every day I have a lot of homework in terms of PT that I do and I follow up on. And actually the PT that I'm going to, you can see him in The Chase, that documentary we did. He's the one working on Justin Rossi. You'll see some stuff in there, but he knows his stuff. So we may end up getting some information from that guy at some point. It could be cool. So,
speaking of your PT, you're talking about something where they're sticking a needle in you and can you talk about that?
Yeah. So, and that's something that hopefully Todd can elaborate on. That's the name of the PT. And we're thinking we might have him on the podcast. We'll see. But
he needs to fix my neck.
Yeah.
My neck is messed up.
So basically dry needling.
Chad's saying yes. He's
mine too. Yeah.
Dry needling is basically it's acupuncture needles that are placed into specific regions on your body. But in this case, it's used a stim is or electronic stimulation is applied to those needles. And the theory behind this is with my situation, the reason my knees are messed up, it's not a bike fit issue. That's been refined and I feel like it's in a great place. It's basically, I have really tight hips like the rest of us that are probably listening to this because we sit down a lot and when we're on a bicycle, we tighten up our hips all the time. The goal with dry needling is you get those needles deep enough down into muscle tissue and you target a specific muscle and that stimulation exhausts that muscle and fatigues it. Because if I was to ask you right now, if you're listening to this, to just flex your glute med, not your min, not your max, just your glute med, you probably wouldn't be able to do it. You'd flex all of it. Yeah. But in this case, you can target one specific muscle and fatigue it if you have a dominant muscle.
Then does it release?
Yeah, so it allows it to release because even with some massage, you just can't get that muscle to release. And it also fatigues it. So then when you do ride or you do whatever your rehab or therapy is after that, it forces other muscles to pick up the pace a bit and to carry their weight instead of one muscle taking too much of the work and causing an alignment or imbalance.
I'm a big believer in that and like tendons or muscles where I've gone to sports massage therapists and they don't like push really hard onto it or roll on it, but they do this thing where they kind of push on it a certain way and I can feel it release.
It's like it's pop, pop, pop almost like
it's like immediate, it's immediate relief.
Yeah.
And then it will come back, but then with enough of that, it kind of goes away.
Yeah. So basically it looks like it pulses your muscles the whole time. And, it was like 45 minutes, of it pulsing and it's pretty intense stuff and it's not very comfortable. It feels really weird. And afterward they do something called pistoning where they take the needle out and this is scary when I heard about it, but it was crazy afterward. He takes the needle almost all the way out. Then he pushes it back in and then he like changes the angle and kind of like tenderizes your muscle with the needle.
I could have done that for free.
Right, exactly. And he does that to kind of break things up. And the only way I can describe it is it feels like somebody's massaging your muscle, but from the inside of your muscle out, like it doesn't feel like somebody's pressing and it's,
How many times have you done that?
I do it again this week. Just once a week is what.
So
we're
do you have any? Do you know if it's helped you yet or not?
I can't quantify that in terms of like any numbers or anything, but I can say that it made me walk differently, made me not sore. I was sore or like fatigued in the muscles that where they did the stimulation there, but the rest of the muscle groups, because I don't use my glute min enough at all. Or my glute max, those became sore over the next few days because it felt like I was having to use them more. And I did notice more soreness in those. So that is kind of an evidence to me that it would be working in theory. So
yeah, I always wonder too with those where it's almost better to just tell the guy, don't tell me what you're doing.
Exactly.
Because else in my brain, I just think
exactly
what's going on.
Yeah. So so that's what I'm doing there, but that's why I missed the last cross race.
Yeah. It's a great time of year too for those who have like little small injuries that could be something bigger later to work on them right now.
Yep.
If you're north of Northern Hemisphere.
Yeah.
So for me, I actually have three races left. I skipped that same race that you skipped too because I family schedule. I'm doing one in Reno that's going to be kind of loose, pretty fast, but not going to be really my cup of tea.
It's where they'll have national championships, it's assumed, in a year or two.
Yeah, yeah, in 1 year.
Yeah.
So I should, hopefully I get better at it. I can ride from my house to that course too, and I've ridden out there a lot, so I should.
No, they're actually going to have it at the same place they had Cross Reno.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's just the backup course. It's just the backup course.
Oh, thank goodness. Yep. Good to hear.
Oh, good, because Cross Reno was much better to my
Much better. Yeah. Good, okay, cool. Thank you, Chad. Yeah, you just made my day.
Yeah. and then I'm going to do one in Sacramento in December. I think it's 2nd. It's on a Saturday.
Nice.
And that one I can only race the early morning race. And I'm not sure, guys, should I race the, there's like a 4-5. I think there's a 4-5 and a 3-4-5. I think because of the schedule with my family, because they're going to go with me, I have to do just the early 4-5. It's 30 minutes. Or on the 3-4-5, that's 45. I think I'd be, I mean, I should be, unless it's really technical, super competitive in the 4-5.
Yeah.
Or the 3-4-5, maybe mid-pack or something, depending on how...
I'm just hard-pressed to travel for a race that's 30 minutes long. I'm hard-pressed to do it for one that's an hour long.
I'm
going to
be down there anyways. That's why I'm doing it.
Gotcha.
Makes sense.
Yeah. And then districts, which I think I'll go...
Both days?
Is it 2 days?
Well, it's kind of a course preview the day before, so you can race it on Saturday, and then the district champs are the next day.
I maybe do. We'll do both days.
I think it's a good idea. I mean, if you can swing it to at least get the pre-ride, not even pre-ride, but pre-race the course.
You know, and many times, like, sure, you find lines and everything else, but many times you just learn, you almost kind of like match a rhythm. I think of like a band playing and like when everybody matches their rhythm, you learn to really pace your effort and match that course well.
Yeah, it's a good opener workout, first off. And secondly, I mean, just like any cross race, especially the ones where you're doing more laps, you just get further and further familiar every lap. Yeah. Every lap you're improving on this turn, you're dismounting a little better here, you know when to carry, when to try to ride something, you learn a lot.
When to ease off on the power, when to hit it hard on those little hills, it's, yeah.
Yeah, and when that happens every lap and you're doing an entire race of it prior to the race that really matters, super beneficial.
They hit this like in sync feeling with the course, yeah.
What about you, Chad?
My travel schedule has been crazy hectic, so I've been out of town for a lot of the races, which is unfortunate. The only one I can squeeze in is actually that district race. So I did the race last weekend, which was super challenging for me because it was a very technical race. Fitness kind of...
Well, that was Davis?
Yeah, fitness kind of took a back seat to that. It was a super fun course.
Like a mountain bike course.
But in terms of racing it, I mean, it was just full gas till you get to the really technical section and you had to go really slow and technically. A lot of places to wash out and... It was good in that sense. I got to work on my technical skills a lot, and that was fantastic. But
did you have used a mountain bike?
Yeah, but like a buddy, Ben Raggins, he used a mountain bike, and the section, the single track section is so overgrown that his bars were actually catching on the bushes. and I'm sure of it because my body was catching on the bushes. So if he had wide handlebars. He said everywhere else on the course it was good, but it was a severe hindrance there, so much so that he would have opted for a cross bike with narrow bars.
Yeah, yeah, no doubt. And there's also the ethical side of things to just run a cross bike in a cross race too, right?
Yeah, you know? Seriously.
But Reno though, man, we got to make it gnarly. Yeah. Everything's got to be gnarly.
The Reno courses are so mountain bike oriented is what I'm finding. Because when we go to Sacramento or Cross Vegas or even Cross Reno, which is an exception to the typical, you know, the Sagebrush series we're talking about, those courses are more, you know, Euro in appearance, you know, rolling grass and different types of dismounts.
I find that's better for my skills.
I find it's better for my knees is what I'm finding.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah, no doubt. Cross is coming to an end, and that's made me pick out my training plan for the year, or kind of lay out my training, the whole season of racing that I'll be doing seasons, I should say. And I have, Chad grinned at me when I told him this earlier, I have my training plan laid out till November 16th, 2017. So
nothing wrong with having a plan. I just,
but what about, January 2018, because that's Cross Nationals.
Yeah, that's right. I need to plan it out even more.
Yeah, man.
Don't worry, only
a year?
Nothing wrong with having a rough framework
under
which to work. That's totally acceptable.
That's what motivates me.
I mean,
exactly.
It's necessary if you
ask
me.
So my goal next year is National Championships, July 20th in West Virginia, Mountain Bike Cross Country National Championships. So it's going to be tough for me because that's a very different type of riding. I'm going to have to work.
What's it like?
It's so out west, we have fast, wide open, dry conditions. Back east, it's slow, rocky, wet conditions. So Howard Grotz, I think he had an average, he won the national championship this year in Mammoth. I think he had a 15.8 mile per hour average. And that was the winning time. I looked at the last time nationals happened back east. Todd Wells won it at this same exact course, and I think it was like 4 years ago. And I think his average speed was 7.8. So that shows you like the massive difference in speed.
Big difference, yeah.
And it's not
run that.
Yeah, and it's not because he was slow. It's just because the terrain is so technical there that you spend a lot of time.
Are you sure it's not because Todd Wells was too slow?
yeah. I think he's all right. Yeah. But you spend so much time, you know, balancing and working over wet, loose sections and a lot of rock. So it's going to be a big challenge for me, and I'm going to be doing a lot of work on my technical skills.
Here's what you need to do. Take a family vacation to Vancouver, hook up with Ryan Leach.
Yeah.
Do some stuff with that, with him.
That would be awesome. Ryan, if you're listening and you want to give me a skills clinic, that'd be awesome.
Yeah, well, he might, you just see if he might give some. I'm not sure if he does that. But Vancouver, based on the videos, looks like it's more like, it's like kind of wet and technical.
It's wet, technical.
I know a lot of his videos are extremely technical.
Yeah, it's pretty impressive stuff. So, and back east is a long way. I'm not going to go back there beforehand to test things out.
Vancouver would be a cool vacation though in the summer.
It'd be perfect. It'd be awesome. Yeah, I would love it.
It's great.
I mean, nothing's better than Whistler.
A lot of mountain biking
there. Yeah, Whistler's heaven up there. So, that's my plan. So I'm doing sweet spot base.
Which volume?
I am going to start out with mid volume with my knees because we're getting those worked on right now. See how that works. And then I usually maintain a high volume plan and then do a lot. Some of the workouts that are lower intensity or have less variation, I'll just stay on the high volume plan, but I'll do those outside once the weather gets better in the spring or summer. Mm-hmm. So I'll work my way up to a high volume plan as my body allows it. And then I'll be continuing there. I'm thinking of doing short power build instead of general. This year at Mammoth, general build would have been a great one because you're doing more consistent efforts. But back east is going to be constant little surges with the constant changes in pace that you have and a lot of high force efforts. So short power build into XEO, our cross-country Olympic plan. And that carries me through to nationals. And after that, I take 2 weeks to just do whatever I want on the bike or off the bike. And then I'll jump into the cross stuff later. So, but that's what I have for the year.
And then cross. So you said November. What's in November?
That drops me just starting up the cross plan 1 week prior to like Cross Vegas. And I'm fine with not coming into there with peak form or anything like that, considering my priority is nationals not long before that. But that just takes me, the end of the cross plan takes me to right there. And our racing usually tops out at mid-November in terms of cross racing locally in Reno. We have more racing over the hill in Sacramento that we can do at that point. But I'm fine with taking a break at that point in November before getting into training for the following year. So,
but nationals.
Yeah, it's true.
Are you going to try to do nationals in Reno?
Yeah, I will. So yeah, never mind. No break.
You got to go for the double.
You got to at least do it. I mean, it's in your backyard.
Oh, yeah.
Mountain bike nationals and cross nationals.
That'd be sweet. Yeah. So yeah, no break. Then
you're a legend.
We'll be continuing.
We dope you. Work. Or dope test you.
Yeah, we'll have to. I'll have to rearrange the cross side of things so then I can make
the
peaks. So.
We dope you. No, I meant test. No, I mean actually.
Let's be clear.
That's already in the coffee, guys.
Yeah. Let's be clear. So that's, and it's funny though, we're talking about this, but that's what most people are going through right now. I'm seeing a bunch of people are signing up for Trainer Road. Which hopefully you stick with us year round and you just follow your training plans all year. But a bunch of people are signing up for Trainer Road and asking questions about base training and different questions about that. It looks like, and we got some complaints last year with people saying that all you talk about is sweet spot or traditional base in the beginning. And that was a hot topic, but this year we've been looking at things and it looks like a vast majority of you are picking sweet spot base. So hopefully
either the message is received or has been received, or people are just getting wise to the fact that, you know, if they don't have a lot of time to train, they've got to do some harder work.
And let's just recap this really shortly. For those that don't know, don't follow our training plans, don't use Trainer Road, anything else that might be listening to this, what is sweet spot base versus traditional base? What differentiates?
It's the traditional base is, you know, what it implies is that it's the traditional approach, the long, slow approach where you accumulate a lot of mileage and you do it at a low intensity. The lot of mileage though is fundamental. Sweet Spot, however, accommodates people who don't have a ton of time to devote to being on the bike. So when you're short on time, you kind of have to shift the balance of that intensity and duration over toward the intensity side. And that's basically what Sweet Spot does, but it does it in such a way that it's not too stressful. It's not, it's still interval training, but it's not interval training in the sense that most people think, that high intensity stuff. It's kind of moderate intensity work, and it has a positive response, not across the board, but a really comprehensive response in terms of cultivating fitness, endurance fitness in particular, in not a lot of time.
Yeah. And you get a little FTP bump too.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. All the time. And it's
FTP.
It's enjoyable. Like it's
really tolerable, and it's not
tolerable
that hard on your body. Yeah. Seriously, you can quite literally do it every day. I don't know why you'd want to. You kind of have to decide marginal returns after a point. You may be on the bike 7 days a week, but you're probably only benefiting from maybe four or five of them. The point is, it's light enough, so to speak, in intensity that it doesn't break you down like the higher intensity stuff does.
Right. Let's go right into Robin's question, because that feeds into this pretty well. He says, "Hey guys, I'm an avid listener of your podcast and a dedicated Trainer Road user of several years now. Thank you very much, Robin. However, have only been following full plans this past year. I'm currently working through Sweet Spot Base 1 mid-volume. My question is, having performed 4 of the 5 weekly sessions on the trainer, the remaining workout is usually a longer duration with a weekend outdoor ride. Is it detrimental to my progress through the plan if I make this ride a higher intensity one?" Do you want to keep going with the question, Chad,
keep
or
going,
answer
yeah.
there?
Yeah. Okay.
"After a week on the trainer, I feel the need to let loose a bit when I'm out on the bike. It doesn't prevent me from continuing with the week's training or following the week's training through fatigue. However, am I losing out in some way by doing this?"
And that's why I wanted you to read on. He basically made my point for him. There's a term out there, and it's not a unique idea at all. I think Matt Fitzgerald may have coined it. It's responsive training, where you just basically kind of listen to your body. I mean, you don't totally veer outside of the structure of your workout, but on those days where you feel really good, maybe you've got a lighter workout scheduled, in your case, and you go out and hammer, but it doesn't have a detrimental response. You recover from it. You're getting stronger. Everything's on track. And then those days where maybe you have a harder workout scheduled, you just don't feel up to it. You recognize this, so you back it off. So again, you still adhere to most of the structure of your workout, but on those days where you feel good or you feel bad, modify accordingly. There's nothing wrong with that.
One thing that I've noticed is that this tends to add up if my FTP is accurate. In other words, that stress, like 1 week I might feel fine, and then as I'm building up toward more intense weeks, if I'm still going out and just flogging myself on a Saturday, it tends to add up, and I start to notice things when my FTP is accurate. That's the key thing.
Just once in a while, though. It's mm-hmm. I'm just like him or like Robin. I don't know if it's a guy or girl, but mm-hmm. You do a lot of indoor training and you go ride with some guys and your fitness is high
and
you feel great. Yeah,
yeah.
And you just
show it off.
Exactly.
Even if it does set you back a little bit and you have to take a couple easy days instead of that Tuesday interval workout, there's nothing wrong with that. If your training by and large stays on track, you're still making improvements, you're not burying yourself in this, fatigue hole. Why not?
It's like a payment in the mental,
absolutely
enthusiasm category.
Yeah, it's a psychological reward.
Yes.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah, there has to be a balance there. And in this situation too, if you do find that you can really go out and go hard and it's something that you feel like you can just keep going on with the training and maybe you should be a little more fatigued, then maybe you need to reconsider the volume of the plan that you have too. That could be a situation.
Perhaps, maybe it's just the healthy trajectory. Maybe you're improving at a rate that your body's happy with. You push it any farther than that and you find out you've overdone it.
If he's improving and he's not getting too tired and he's having good breakthrough outside workouts, keep doing that forever and just be consistent until it stops.
No doubt. Matt's question, he says, "I'm following Sweet Spot Base High Volume and would like to add some weight training. When would be the best days to fit this in without compromising the plan?" And we've covered this before, but...
We have. I'm gonna take a slightly different track here. I actually made notes because I have so much to say on this topic that
just
I want to keep it. I want to keep it.
Don't.
And that's where I'm going with this.
Okay, no,
it's absolutely not. Okay, so we're going to break it down to two things. I'm going to throw some fancy terms at you, but there's a couple enzymes. One is more aerobic in nature. The other's kind of the other end of that. So mTORC1, I've talked about that before. It's a mammalian target of rapamycin complex 1. Big word, but just mTORC1 for our purposes. The other is AMPK. That's adenosine monophosphate activated protein kinase. Another big word, AMPK for our purposes. And if I can veer off course just quickly in my my due diligence researching this stuff, I did find a couple of studies that actually supported moderate alcohol consumption. And one of them has to do with...
You can always find a study to back yourself up.
You know what? I just felt kind of bad.
Moderate, Chad.
Moderate, and that is the key.
I found one the other day that said In-N-Out's great, pre and post workout.
These are actually reputable studies. The people conducting them, the structure of the studies, how they were carried out, they're worthwhile. One thing increases insulin sensitivity. That's a big deal. Decreases. What
does it, weight lifting or alcohol?
No. We're on the moderate alcohol consumption just for three short topics here. Insulin sensitivity goes up.
No one even asked about it. He just wants to know.
He just wants to
know. Triglyceride concentrations drop, and it promotes leanness by stimulating this AMPK that I'm about to talk about. So that's what led me down this little rabbit hole.
In the study, what was considered moderate alcohol intake?
I think it was two alcoholic beverages.
So
we're talking like a couple
alcohol,
beers
a week,
but no,
a day.
Yeah. I'll have to look at that. Let's just call it moderate alcohol consumption for now.
Not drinks high percentage beers.
Yeah. So I'm not supporting my point very well, but the fact is you can get away with some of it. It's not just detrimental. There is some upside. Okay. So back to AMPK and mTORC. So AMPK is an aerobic enzyme. mTORC1 is a muscle growth enzyme, so the other end of that spectrum. And the idea is to maximize both, but you can't have both at once. So AMPK is up, mTORC is off. mTORC is up, AMPK is off, sort of thing. So when you do endurance exercise, you're stimulating this aerobic exercise. So you get this bump in AMPK activity. You get these aerobic adaptations. So one of the adaptations we see through base training is an increase in these aerobic enzymes. That's what you're getting. When you weight train, that shuts off the AMPK. So the idea is that you can have one or the other. You can't simultaneously train endurance while you train strength. It's one or the other. So when you do your aerobic exercise and then you refuel afterwards, that turns off AMPK. Later on in the day, you do your that's the ideal time to turn on the mTORC, right? To do the strength training. AMPK is off. It's not interfering with mTORC. You do your strength workout. That mTORC1 basically kicks into effect during recovery. So where I'm going with all of this is it's all about timing and diet, right? You don't want to do a bunch of endurance work and then immediately jump into strength training right afterwards because those AMPK levels are still high. They'll hinder that mTORC1. You don't want to do your strength training and then dive into endurance exercise because it turns off the recuperative benefits of that high mTORC1
response.
When you
say dive in, are you talking about going from like one workout right into the next same day thing?
Exactly.
So I've done like dips in the office and then immediately gone to go do my interval session.
Yeah, so the gist of this, you know, not to belabor this whole point, is that if you can distance those as much as possible, that's ideal. So you do your endurance work early in the day. Save your strength training for late in the day because when you go to bed, those mTORC1 levels are high. You get 8, 10, depending on when before you do your endurance exercise, 12 hours of higher levels of mTORC. mTORC1, the anaerobic benefit. So if you can separate those, that's ideal. Trying to combine them too closely together, you're negating the effect, one of the two effects that you're after. So in the case of Mike's question here, Matt's question, when to do it. Ideally, you're going to do it in the evening, but you don't want to do it on fatigued muscles. So probably not directly after or the same day as a high intensity interval workout. You also don't want to do a bunch of weight training, cook those muscles, go to bed and wake up with still tired muscles and try to do your high intensity training.
So opposite end of the day on a more aerobic workout.
Ideally,
day.
Yeah.
And it's ideal.
I just saw a video of some guy doing squats and then he couldn't walk afterwards.
Yeah.
Don't do that.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So you also have to prioritize what's more important. Are you really looking to improve your strength or are you as an endurance athlete really trying to foster greater endurance? It's one or the other. You can have them both, but you can only have them to a certain degree.
Gotcha.
Yep. The top cycle, like Chris Froome doesn't squat 325 10 times, right?
Now, if you look at like a guy like Nino Schurter, he kind of periodizes his weightlifting and he does quite a lot of it. There's like a whole series called No Shortcuts that followed him on the way to his Olympic gold medal in Rio this year. And he does a lot of stuff in the gym with weights, a lot of work, but he times that. He's very specific about how he times that. That decreases as his time on the bike increases in that time of year. his time in the gym increases when he is spending less time on the bike.
And that theory, periodization, is put forth by Bompa. And I'm touching his book. We're in Chad's office.
Right there.
We have the fourth edition of, it's called Periodization. He's like kind of the guy that started that all off.
Mm-hmm.
Chad's looking at me like I'm saying something wrong.
No. I just am thinking to myself, I have yet another point to make on this whole matter. And it's just that most people who are on trainer road are time constrained. And
time constrained, I mean, you don't have 20 to 30 hours a week.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Maybe you don't even have 12 to 15. And if you're devoting two or three of those to weight training every week, that's 2 or 3 hours that you could be putting, you know, toward your cycling.
Yeah, so evaluate that, right?
Yeah. Again, yeah, and you have to decide, are these strength gains actually manifesting in the form of a higher FTP or greater sprint power or whatever it is you're after, or are you just kind of spinning your gears?
Good stuff.
And adding extra weight to your frame.
Yeah.
Chad
affects your power to weight ratio.
Poo-poo for all the time, because he could get a lot skinnier if he would just stop lifting upper body.
My body likes, I respond well to resistance training. It's a fortunate / unfortunate thing.
So we're actually getting a new office right now, and it's going to have I'm very, very excited. A decent gym in it. And what about if I just switch them opposite, where in the morning I lift weights, and then at like 3 o'clock I do my
session? You know, try it out. It's not like we're trying to maximize the potential we are actually.
I am.
Yeah. But yeah, just try to figure it out. I mean, the gist of this are the basics. If you break it down, endurance work early in the day. When you refuel, you're going to shut off that AMPK. So the endurance benefits start to taper, dwindle, or maybe turn off. Then you do your strength work later on. That bumps up your mTORC1. When you're recovering, you go to bed and you get a whole lot of that exposure. Get up, repeat.
Seems like the best thing to do would be if I had like a aerobic workout in the morning, then I did a weight session, then the next day was a rest day, then the next day was intervals. That would fit really nicely.
Sounds pretty solid, yeah.
But so what, I've seen research where like explosive training can help with efficiency in running and in cycling.
Yeah, there's a lot of research to support that.
Yes. But for just weightlifting, is there, there's some, right?
Not so much.
It goes back and forth, right? It actually improves. So what we're talking about enzymes here, but is there actually research that then gets you where someone got more, you know, a higher FTP because they...
Yeah, see, this is all just, you know, how do I balance endurance training with strength training? These aren't people who are like, I want to become the best endurance athlete possible. Gotcha. How to do that? Because if that were the case, I'd probably tell them to do very little, if any, weight training.
Yeah.
But on the flip side of that...
So let me just stress that point one more time. We are describing if you want to do both.
Yep.
Yeah. We're not saying do both to be national champion.
Yeah, exactly. That's a clear point. Yes. Yeah.
Yep. And in support of weight training, there is just the general fitness aspect to it. A healthy, strong body can ride a bike better. It doesn't necessarily positively influence your FTP or any skills on the bike.
It doesn't mean that you will be faster, but it could make you stronger.
Make you stronger in a general sense. So this comes down to priorities.
Your whole life could be better.
Yeah. Do you want to be a better endurance athlete?
Attract a better mate.
Yes.
Or do you just want to be better?
Truth. Osteoporosis is something that they say can go down.
There's lots of health benefits for strength training outside of cycling that are proven.
Yep.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's go.
We're not going to get hate mail now.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's awesome.
Yeah. And Froome, we don't mean to bag on you. You don't look like a weightlifter, but don't worry about it.
He's okay with it.
He's okay with it. I'm sure he's probably looking at his yellow jersey and not caring if he's listening. Mike, I've recently heard a lot about polarized training, what we just talked about there. We got a little ahead of ourselves. From what I've been able to research, it sounds like it's a good training option for experienced athletes. I'm wondering what your opinion is on polarized training, whether you plan to provide a polarized training plan in the future. And Chad, before you jump in on this, the reason I put this question in is because I think that many people see the concept of polarized training and they assume it perhaps to be something that it isn't. If you want to explain what it is.
Polarized training has also been referred to as 80-20 training. And the idea is really quite simple. Easy days are easy, hard days are hard. That's really what it boils down to. So if you've...
Sounds like training road.
Yeah, and that is. That's basically what we do. We may not polarize it as obviously as, you know, Steven Seiler supports or recommends. We may not make everything, that 80% easy time 60%, but we also don't have a ton of time when it comes to that long, slow stuff, which is why we kind of make up for it with, you know, higher intensity, sweet spot-ish sort of stuff. But that kind of flies in the face of polarization in that it's in that middle realm that a polarized model tries to veer away from. Mm-hmm. So, but the fact is, it's just like the traditional approach. If you don't have a lot of time to dedicate to it, you're not going to get a lot of those aerobic benefits that come with the long, slow stuff. Yeah. So polarized works, again, if you have a lot of time. And it works in the sense that if you really bomb your system with high stress, high intensity intervals, and then you rest really well, and then you bomb yourself with high intensity intervals, that in and of itself is a polarized model.
Exactly. Yeah. And that was the main point that I wanted to get at.
So what if someone's not, for everyone who's not a trained road user, shame on you, but if they are, let's say you're just listening to this and you don't have a power meter, and I want to try polarized training, what would I do?
High intensity intervals and basically breathe through your nose, easy rides.
And high intensity intervals, like how, what length?
Ideally, probably 2 to 3 minute VO2 max sort of efforts are going to have the most bang for your buck.
Find a short hill. Yep. Just try to race up that thing as quickly as you can.
2 or 3 minutes, ride down to the bottom, taking, you know, about 2 or 3 minutes, about equal times rest, mm-hmm. Do it again.
And then on the off days,
take it easy. I mean, truly
really
easy. So that nothing's welling up in your legs. Your breathing isn't ramped up. You're not wishing for the end of the workout. You're, you know, maybe actually even enjoying yourself.
Yeah. I find that is, I'm going to go maybe against the grain for polarized training, but that will have, that's VO2 max training, and you will get a really big response for 6 to 8 weeks, and then you'll kind of plateau.
Yes. That's what I found personally.
Yeah, you can't, like, you want to add more, but you can't do 25 intervals like that.
It's almost like Strava fitness. Like, if you look at,
I was going to say CrossFit fitness, because that's what people do in CrossFit. That's exactly how CrossFit workouts are.
When it comes to high-intensity training, you have to look at the hormonal and the endocrinological side of things. You know, what's going on under the surface? I mean, just aside from what your muscles are doing, what's happening to your body as a whole?
Right. And the reason that I brought out that Strava example is not because Strava advocates this type of training, but when people ride outside and they're just tooling around in KOM hunting, right? Or they just want to go hard on a segment. Usually those segments aren't too long in most cases. Sometimes you're going for a longer one, but they'll go for that short climb that's really tough with their buddies. And then they're completely worked and they'll just sit for a while. And a lot of people kind of see a boost at first, and then things plateau with that type of
They end up doing that every day. Every ride kind of devolves into this chasing Strava KOMs.
Yeah, and that's a tempting thing with that. So, cool. Let's go into Ricky's question. Chad, you'll have more to speak on this, and I think Nate too. He says, Ricky says, so now I've been mixing a dollop of parquet, which parquet is, it's not high quality.
Not what we're talking about. That's going to be my first point.
He says, I've been mixing a dollop of parquet in with my morning coffee, but all that has been accomplishing is making my hair shiny. Discuss.
Okay, so first off, parquet doesn't qualify. We're talking about grass-fed butter from, you know, grass-fed cows. And when I say grass-fed, I'm talking organic and 100% grass-fed. Organic implies there's no hormones, pesticides, antibiotics, any of that stuff that's basically anti-nutrient to your body. And the grass-fed, the 100%, is super crucial because cattle are ruminant animals, right? They have these four compartment stomachs that digest particular things. The human body does not. In any case, they don't digest grains any better than we do. They do, however, digest grass quite well. This translates to meat and fat and butter that are higher in super important things, you know, omega-3s, CLA.
CLA, yeah.
Yeah, CLA, which is, what is it? Linoleic acid.
Starts with C-O-N. I forget what it is.
Yeah, conjugated linoleic acid. And then carotenoids, antioxidants, trace minerals, vitamins, all this stuff that you don't get when you grain feed animals. And you may see grass-fed on the label, but unless it's 100% grass-fed, that could mean it's grain finished. Which over the course of even 80 days in the case of an Australian study, which is a solid, reputable study, I can provide names on it if anybody's super curious, email me. They compare grass-fed cattle, grain-fed cattle over the short term, and we're talking 80 days, and then long-term grain-fed, which basically that's all they are. And the degradation in the omega-3 content, the CLA content, all the good stuff, it goes away. I mean, it like disappears.
Wow.
So if animals are simply grain fed, it's never really there to start with. And what we're getting at here is that unhealthy animals yield unhealthy meat, unhealthy butter, unhealthy fat, all these things that you don't want. So you can't just put any butter in your butter coffee. It has to be grass-fed, 100%, and organic.
But your hair is shiny.
There's some studies, so there's too, that you can look up for CLA. Mm-hmm. I saw one, this is probably
any of these terms
10 years ago for CLA, where someone, they I had a group supplement CLA, just straight CLA, and they were getting, it was like, they lost 3 pounds of fat and gained 6 pounds of lean muscle mass.
Yeah. And just on top of it, that, it does good things for your brain as well. So brain and body.
And what's the brand that you like? Kerrygold, right?
Kerrygold. It's one of the few that we can find.
Yeah, we can get that in Costco. Mm-hmm. It's from Ireland. So there's probably some people in Ireland like, it's everywhere.
So we have all the time.
Yeah, I'm afraid there's going to be a run on it. So every time we go, we load up on that stuff.
And there's actually Kerrygold cheese that's grass-fed.
I've been eating some grass-fed
extra sharp cheddar cheese, which is delicious.
I bet it is.
It is good. That's kind of a good late night snack where it keeps me full and I'm not eating instead of like a... So I swear I'm not fat, but my wife makes these little like...
and there it is.
yeah.
These little, take a drink, apple pies that are small, and I'll put like 4 scoops of ice cream on it. So when I really
just
like...
Just 4 scoops.
Yeah. So I'll bake that
apple
pie.
Is it grass-fed ice cream?
No. Tillamook. And then so I put that on there, and geez, that is really good. It's, I'm sure it's 1,200 calories, but yeah. It's...
Calories, schmalories.
So let's, another recipe question, Quadrathon from Twitter, which is an awesome name, by the way, there. And he's far from as pretentious as it seems with Quadrathon. Stuart's a good dude. Can you ask Nate for his steel cut recipe with butter? He mentioned batch making 2 to 3 episodes ago.
Yeah. So, batch making, well,
I think there's prep. Didn't you make a bunch of it?
Yeah. Yeah.
There's two ways that I do it. One is if you have a rice maker, we have one of those like fancy rice makers where you can set it to go in the morning. I put in the regular steel cut oatmeal recipe that's on the box with water, and I do it overnight. You got to put a little bit of salt in it or else it'll boil over. Mm. And then in the morning you wake up and you have steel cuts, and you can steel cut oatmeal, and you can do that with like the raw steel cut that's not instant or something like that. The other way I do it, and then you just add butter afterwards. And it melts in. The other way I do it is use the instant stuff. And it's instant's just, it's cut a little bit more. And you have to get a gigantic bowl to put in the microwave or else it'll boil over. Or you have to stop it all the time to like stir it. So a huge, huge like salad bowl. I put it in there. I just do the common, whatever the water says, and do it for like 4 minutes. Mm. Then I add butter to that.
And this Kerrygold butter that you're using?
Yeah, I am, yeah. Yeah, I'm doing that for my family because... even if the whole butter coffee movement I'm skeptical on, the CLA research is wide, and the research that fat is good for you is widespread.
Yep.
So, saturated fat, mind you.
Yeah, and so those two things are enough for me to, like, we're going to use butter anyways. And right. We've not been using margarine, I think, since I've been 18. My parents still will use margarine. Shame. Right. My dad might be listening. Switch, Dad. You know you want butter.
It tastes so much better, dude.
Yeah,
it does.
Exactly. So yeah.
Let's go into the Hawks question from Twitter. He says, my previous 8-minute test is better than my current 20-minute test. I assume he means the number is higher in when he says better. Is it the fact that I have not been doing long, steady rides? So do long rides affect that?
No, not really. What you're looking at here is that the 8-minute test might better suit your muscle physiology. You might be a little more of a little more predisposed to the short or the fast switch side of things, and you're getting a little more of an anaerobic contribution over those shorter durations. The difference isn't going to be that much, and I'm betting it's not in your case, but it doesn't boil down to whether or not you've been doing long rides or not.
Yeah, well, you might see this in forums, but AWC, anaerobic work capacity, that's what people say. So if you have a really high anaerobic work capacity, shorter stuff, you'll have a whole bunch of anaerobic contribution.
Yeah, so basically you're allowing sugar to contribute a little more to the work, relying a little less on fat metabolism or aerobic metabolism.
And if you have a high anaerobic work capacity, you might be good at a breakaway, 1K to go, crit stuff. Track
pursuit. Criterium guy. You might not be a great 40K TT guy.
Yep. Exactly. Or a triathlete.
Yep. Yeah. So to touch on this though, Chad, let's say he is doing, he's used to doing a lot of long rides because it makes it seem like he's not doing them anymore. Let's say you're used to doing a lot of long rides, then suddenly you drop down to do an 8-minute test. isn't there some type of, you know, we're talking about like muscular recruitment patterns or strength conditioning or anything else that we'd be talking about with them doing a constant effort versus, or like a long effort versus an 8 minute?
Let me put it a different way.
8 and 20 is kind of similar.
Yeah, a different way to put it is, we talked about it, FTP is one marker. So if we all have the same FTP, but we don't, the race could be different depending on the type of race. Someone mm-hmm. might be better at short intervals. Someone might be tuning their fitness to a half Ironman. Justin Rossi, we've been talking with him right now, or I haven't talked to him lately, but he's switched to being a triathlete. And although his FTP might be similar, he's not very punchy on climbs mm-hmm. because he's doing just all of this kind of FTP and lower.
Yeah, a lot of that capability training goes away. You have to keep it sharp.
Yeah, so what, I still,
Jonathan's point is that maybe this guy just did the cross plan or something, and he's doing just really short intervals. Mm-hmm. And so he goes into a 20-minute one and hasn't been doing any long intervals at all. Not maybe like a 3-hour endurance.
Yeah, so his stamina has declined, or his time to exhaustion has declined. Mm-hmm. We talked about this last week, whereas, you know, you may have an FTP of, you know, 300 watts doesn't necessarily mean you can ride for an hour at 300 watts. Mm-hmm. Some people, just because that's where their lactate levels off, are hard pressed to do that for 30 minutes. People who are highly conditioned and are, you know, maybe training for a long course triathlon can do that for 60, 70 minutes.
Yeah, theoretically, we all should.
I don't get that point.
Right.
I've always thought his FTP is the power I can hold for an hour.
Nope.
Yes. Nope. You just ruined my world.
Functional threat.
In theory, right?
My head just exploded.
In theory, that's what it should be, right? We should be able to do that, but it's
basically a potential. So, you know, if that's where your lactate level's off, can you actually sit at that, you know, 4 millimoles or whatever it happens to be for you for an hour? It takes a lot of conditioning to be able to do that.
You know, Wiggins even mentioned the fact that he knew where his FTP was, and for the hour record, I believe he actually shot under his FTP because he mm-hmm. wasn't confident in his ability to maintain his FTP for that long. Just because maintaining it for an hour, there are a whole lot of factors that come into play to be able to maintain that type of pace for that long. I know for me, especially, you're talking about an 8 minute interval versus a 20 minute interval. And I am so mentally weak with long efforts that I bet that my results would be hampered heavily by that.
Well, I've mentioned this before, but I've done both, like with a day rest in between, and both times my FTP, I poop you not, was 2 watts different.
Yeah,
which is, I wasn't trying to do anything.
Right.
Yeah, I was just like, whoa, that's actually pretty cool. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that
it was not an impressive FTP either time, but
it was close together, so that part's impressive. I you know, and this is really, I guess it's impossible to quantify, but there's even a whole book written on this, and I can't think of the name, perhaps you can, Chad, but about the mental aspect of human performance with athletes and endurance athletes. There's a great book that I'm thinking of where they talk about Shane Sutton and how he was training athletes and a bunch of other athletes from the triathlon perspective mostly, but lots of different books on that just discuss the potential of mental limiters versus physical limiters in human mm-hmm. performance. And I know for me,
sports psychology is a pretty in-depth realm. I mean, mm-hmm. there's a lot, man, we could spend an entire podcast on that easy.
Oh yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So there are a lot of things that could affect it, but I think that we've covered it for you there, the Hawk. So James, he says, thoughts on days needed in the same time zone before a race when international travel is required with a 10-hour time difference. What do you guys think?
Okay, so this, having recently done some international trips, Reno to London, oh, it destroyed me. I was so tired. I think it was up at like 2 in the morning. I was just up. I went into the gym. Luckily, they had a 24-hour gym and worked out. Yeah, so things you can do, this was, we should ask DC Rainmaker, but melatonin to help you get back on track.
And by get back on track, you mean kind of reestablish your circadian rhythm, so like your hormonal release, all these things get out of whack when you rise at different times. And
yep, and getting sunlight at the right times too, that mm-hmm. will help your circadian
really
rhythm.
Really tough in London, yeah.
Yep. Yeah. getting your a workout in will actually help too. Mm-hmm. And also that first day where you have jet lag and you just want to go to bed at 3 in the afternoon, wait.
Yeah, try real hard.
Try to schedule your flight so that you, like, if you're going to sleep on the plane, get it so that when you come in, it's morning.
Yes.
Not when you come in, it's 7 p.m. at night, and you wake, you get there, and it's like, I'm awake, but it's 7 p.m. Yeah, exactly.
That'd be terrible.
All of those things. So days before, I mean, there's a lot of stuff you can read about jet lag, but I want to say good 3 days at least before I started feeling okay.
Yeah. And I don't have much experience in this realm, so I can't speak much to it. Just things that I've read from other athletes. And I know that it very much varies from athlete to athlete and day to day. In some situations, it affects them more than others. And I really like and one thing that I've found consistently, like if you look at Formula One athletes like Lewis Hamilton or anybody else like that, he forces his life into a schedule based on where he is, rather than relying on the schedule, the circadian rhythm perhaps that he's used to from home. And these guys don't even really have home, I guess you could say, because they're just traveling around the world all the time. But he forces himself wherever he's going, he is on that schedule. And I'm not sure what he does to alter, you know, if he uses melatonin or anything else like that, but they can really help. So,
yeah, and it's also kind of like along the lines of acclimatization too. If you have the luxury of being able to arrive earlier and give yourself more time to adjust to these new sleeping patterns and waking patterns.
Mm-hmm. The other thing that is a luxury, but if you can fly business where there's a lay flat, I just did that for the first time. So I don't know if you guys know, but I'm actually 6'6", and I have a way hard time sleeping in coach. I've done the coach upgrade, but I still don't sleep very well. We did a red eye from Hawaii, and that just
it was bad.
Bad.
It was bad.
But I mean, so what we're doing now with Trainer Road is we have a mileage credit card before we had a cash back one. So all of our stuff goes through there, and we get a lot of miles. But what you can do, at least on United, that's what we have, is there is a business saver mileage one. And sometimes you can get that if you book really early, especially if you're gonna do a race, you kind of know you're gonna do it early. And Ironman, you're gonna sign up like a year ahead of time. If you book it super early, the amount of miles you have to pay for business is the same or less than economy. Mm-hmm. But you just have to book it really early and then look at the kind of days. And that's a common thing. So if you can get a rewards card with that, it can be worth it to fly business. And then that just, to me, especially if you get these 10-hour flights, it's...
makes a massive difference.
If you can, yeah, you get you get treated like royalty. It's so awesome. It's kind of like a cruise. They just keep bringing your food and you watch a movie and you go to sleep. And you know, wake up and you're there.
One thing that I thought of from the Jeff Kabush podcast that we did just about a month ago, I asked him why we get completely destroyed. In other words, North Americans, and we go over to the World Cup races in Europe and we just get destroyed. And one of the contributing factors that Jeff noted was that it's just, even though you think that you're acclimatized and you're all set up with a schedule, he said, it takes a long time to get onto that schedule.
That's the problem.
And he said, we're always at kind of a disadvantage. So I think the perhaps the first thing that we can say is set your expectations low, or be okay with the fact that you might not be as in the same or have the same ability to perform that you did right before you left or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think Jeremy Powers mentioned that too, talking about him and Stephen Hyde, how Jeremy Powers struggles with it because he doesn't live over there. And I think Stephen Hyde has actually relocated to Europe and his results are reflective of that.
Yeah, yeah.
I found too, going from, so Reno, London really hard, Reno to Tokyo, I had no problems, which is, I forget what the time change is, but going that way, it was easy.
Yeah, the other
even and when we went to Hawaii, it was only 2 hours, but
yeah,
three was it three?
Yeah,
yeah, but it was easy too.
Totally,
I mean, three is not that hard, anyways. But
no, yeah, so it will affect you, and I did to back Jeff up there. I can think of when Nino Schurter, when our guys go over there to the World Cup mountain bike races, he laps us and makes us, you know, just look like we don't even belong on the same course, which is crazy because the athletes here, like Howard Grotz, like everybody else, are absolutely world class. But when he came over here, I can remember he's raced a Sea Otter for the past couple of times, and he is nowhere near as dominant. Yeah. So that speaks to it, you know. So yeah. His next question, how to know when to not even start a workout if you are sick from swollen glands to a common cold or something more serious?
Common sense, James. Mostly, I've always abided by the rule, the whole, if it's above the neck, you can probably get away with a little bit of work. If it's below the neck, you're probably best staying off the bike. But even if it is above the neck and you have a high intensity workout plan, you have to realize or recognize how much that's going to pull on your immune system. So if your body's already battling an illness or an oncoming illness that may not be that severe, you could be setting the stage for a higher level of severity.
I've done that. Where it'll be like a Sunday where I feel something coming on and I'm like, oh, I'm going to be sick a little next week. So I'm going to sneak in a really big workout.
Yeah.
And then worst I the next
never works.
And I'm just like 12 times sicker than I would have been. I don't really know that I'd be 12 times sicker, but it comes on really, really hard.
But that's it. I mean, it's just common sense. You know, you're getting sick, probably shouldn't do a hard workout. I mean, even the lighter workouts, you know, if I'm going to get on the bike and since I can't go hard today, instead I'm going to ride 2 hours at 60, 70%, it still pulls on your system, a system that's already taxed trying to deal with some form of insult.
One way that I look at this too is when I'm sick, and even if it's just a little bit, it really does affect my ability to perform on the bike. I notice that.
Yeah. So there's a whole other side of it. You know, what's the potential training benefit to this anyway?
Mm, yeah. And I think about that and I think if I can't perform it where I should be able to perform, perhaps it's better for me to just take that time to skip that workout, sleep, or even skip those 2 days, do whatever I need to.
No, it's not even a perhaps thing.
Then I can hit my targets where I need
to. Just shut it off, even if it's just for that day. Even if you just skip that workout and you wake up the next day feeling better, then get back at it.
Yeah,
for
me, the alternative is you don't rest, you keep working out, and you either maintain a subpar level of performance or just drive yourself deeper down.
Or and just stay sick for a long time.
Yeah, so
low grade.
I get sinus infections real easily. And my rule of thumb is if it's the beginning of the sickness, skip the workout. But then at the end of your sickness where you're getting better day to day and you still might feel not 100%, but my motivation is high and I still feel good, mm-hmm. but I still maybe have like a little bit of a runny nose or I'm still like got a little bit of a cough, but it doesn't interfere with my workout, then I will do some kind of workout and get back into it. I don't wait because sometimes it takes, with some sicknesses, you know, I've had one where I had a cough for like 3 weeks.
Yeah.
I wasn't going to just stop all training for 3 weeks.
Right.
And I could still get through my workouts and maybe that's why I had it for 3 weeks. But
but when you're rebounding from it, you can kind of start to sprinkle the work back in and see how it makes you feel, how you feel the next day.
But that's not a key on the way term down.
Yes, that's true. And that's a key term that you said, Chad, kind of sprinkle it in. Don't be so harsh with yourself. Like if you can't hold a goal when you're coming back from that sickness, it's okay. Adjust that intensity.
I'm going to say it one more time. On the way down, you don't know how deep you're going to go when you're sick, right? And doing more workouts might make you go down even deeper. On the way back, when you're getting better and better each day, you can easily say, I did a workout, the next day I feel worse. I'm not going to do any more workouts till I feel better. Mm-hmm. I do a workout, the next day I still feel better. Okay. This looks like it's working.
Yeah, it's tough to watch that fitness slip away. I mean, even if it's only happened super slowly and you're only losing a little bit of fitness each subsequent day off the bike, but the fact is you start back too soon, it's still damning.
Yeah. Avoid the snowball effect. Alexander, 5 stars to Trainer Road. Thanks, Alexander.
Yes.
And for anyone that listens or that's listening right now, if
you can review us.
Yeah, if you can give us 5 stars on what you're listening to, go ahead. We appreciate it. Which by the way, I think we're number 7 now for outdoor sports podcasts on iTunes.
In the U.S.
Which that's we're higher. Awesome. We're higher in most of the other countries. In
Australia, we were pretty high, weren't we?
We're number 3. Oh. Yeah.
And you know, somebody too, we read all these reviews. They usually make me happy, but one said, Jonathan and Nate, stop with the excuses, HTFU.
Which, if you don't know what that means, look it up. We won't say it.
Yeah. I don't, I give a lot of excuses? I say things that...
My thought was I can't think of giving an extraordinary amount of excuses, which is a bad thing if I can't pick them out. So that means I'm probably used to making them, which is bad.
All I know is when I used to run my indoor training centers, I had a big old poster board on the wall. At the top, it said excuses. There was a little pencil dangling from it.
Yeah.
The implication being, write them down here because nobody wants to hear them.
What I do is I say limiters. Like limiters, my technical ability. It's not an excuse. It's something I need to improve.
Right.
So I'm picking out what I'm bad at and saying, I need to improve this.
And reviewer, I'll just take your advice. I'll be a man.
HTFU, Jonathan.
Yeah, exactly. So let's get back to Alexander's question. I've been using Trainer Road for nearly a year now. I did 2 full distance Ironmans this year with the full base build specialty plan. So for those that are listening that's wondering, that wonder what that is, we break our training plans up into 3 consecutive phases, base, build, and specialty. So that means that he followed... geez, it could have been up to 30 weeks roughly of training. Yeah, so
in general,
right around there.
28 week
yep.
set of phases.
He says, for the second one, I did a short rebuild and then another specialty. So that's, we even talked about that last week if you want to listen more about rebuilds. But for 2017, I'm planning Ironman Nice, which has a lot of climbing with a few flat sections. Should I still follow the full distance triathlon plan or modify parts of it to reflect the climbing aspects of the bike leg? Keep up the good work. And this is operating on the assumption that the full distance plan is steady state and this mm-hmm. is a hilly race. So that's the wrench in the spokes.
Yeah, you're still going to pace it the same way though. I mean, you're going to have different stress on the muscles. So if I were to recommend tweaking anything, it would be that your long rides, if you choose to do those outdoors, make them in the hills. It's still about muscular endurance and high FTP and, you know, pacing the bike leg rides so you're not thrashed on the run, et cetera. But it's still the same sort of muscle stress.
The only thing you get is you might push a little bit harder in the hills because you're going to have,
yeah.
I think on Nice, you're going to have some descents where you're not pedaling at all. Mm-hmm. And
that's really a pacing strategy more than anything. It's not going to affect how you train.
Yeah. Because he's still going to be so low.
Yeah.
He's not going to be going above his FTP.
Still 112 mile bike ride.
For triathlon pacing information, check out the Matt Lieto podcast that we did. He talked a lot about how sometimes he just keeps shifting down through those gears to hit where he needs to be, or sometimes mm-hmm. he changes that around. So he gives a lot of information there.
Yeah, and really the only thing we could talk about in addition to what we've already mentioned is that, you know, if you have some excess weight to lose, that'll benefit you on the hills.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's huge for Ironman.
Oh, I'm sure.
Running a marathon, gigantic, and anything with hills on the bike, I mean, it helps too, but running is...
Yeah, when you're talking about an event that long and like accruing, you know, accumulating fatigue for that whole day, little changes do make a difference later on through that day, especially aerodynamic ones. But
different aerodynamic topic. On the bike,
yeah.
Run weight, but
yep.
weight also but helps hills. If it's hilly like this. Yeah.
Yeah. Doa, and I hope that's how I say your name. That's what Google told me, so we'll see. I've trained with Trainer Road a couple of times now, and I noticed something about my heart rate. Whenever I'm doing multiple intervals at the same wattage, my heart rate sometimes gets higher at every interval. For instance, today I did antelope, which are 6 10-minute sweet spot intervals. The average heart rate at the first interval was 159, which would be usual for me. The second reached 165, third 170, fourth 173, and fifth and sixth 174. These last ones would be above my lactate threshold heart rate. So, or what he assumes to be. My question, is this normal or does this indicate fatigue or an FTP that is set too high?
It does indicate fatigue. It can also indicate dehydration. You know, as you become dehydrated, your blood becomes more viscous. More viscous blood means the heart has to work a little harder to get it out there. So, you know, it climbs with each interval. More likely, you're just fatiguing your faster twitch fibers, your sugar burning fibers. As they become fatigued, you run out of sugar, you become, you know, depleted, glycogen depleted. And unless, even if you're ingesting glucose, you know, hitting the gels or whatever, you're still running out of gas for those particular fibers. So the aerobic contribution has to kind of pick up the slack. The more aerobic contribution you get, the more oxygen you got to get to those muscles, the more heartbeats you got to perform to get that blood out to those muscles.
And so I want to say this is very normal.
Very
you
normal.
Look in the rides.
Very normal.
Yep. This happens to me.
This is why everyone train by heart rate.
Yep.
And this happens to you every time, right, Chad?
Every time.
And Jonathan?
Every time. Yesterday's workout, yep.
You look in it, so it's not necessarily like, oh, I'm not an aerobic athlete because of this. At the levels of intensity, this is going to happen.
Yep, exactly right. And
fatigue happens. You want a steady heart rate, you're basically going to have to go low end, stay there, and over time, gradually decrease your effort.
Yeah, that's the tricky part. And once again, another example of how heart rate can be tricky. It's something to watch out. So no, it's not abnormal. I see it all the time. And I usually see it plateau after a certain set of intervals. If the intensity is consistent and I have a lot of intervals, it'll kind of increase and then I'll more or less kind of stabilize at something.
That's just the nature of fatigue.
That's normal. Yep. Yeah. So no issues there.
I would say in the opposite too, if you're doing, let's say, sweet spot or FTP intervals and your heart rate doesn't go up at all, maybe your FTP is not high enough.
Or exactly. It's not enough stress to induce what should happen, which is fatigue.
Exactly. It's kind of a, like you said, it's that transition of the fuel that's being used in your body there. It's an evidence of that. So Crockett, awesome name, by the way. Love Trainer Road, best info out there. Sweet. Trying to get more systematic about my approach to using it. My A race for next year is in 2017 is the Hoodoo 500 in August. I looked this up, guys. I didn't know it existed. Chad, you and I have ridden a lot of those roads when we did that Rockwell Relay.
Oh, cool.
It goes from St. George out to the middle of nowhere in Utah, back over to St. George, and covers a huge amount of the area there. He says, I'm doing the 3-day stage race. The first day, by the way, is about 202 miles. Second day is 174, I think. And then the third day is like 100 or 171. Then the third day is 144.
Why?
Long. It's brutal.
Thing is easy.
I know. I know. Right. I'm a wuss.
One upping you.
He says, I have a 24-hour race and rides. This is just this guy's bag. That's what he likes to do. 24-hour race / ride in February. So I think it's a ride, but he just plans on racing it in February of next year. And he says it's a Ram qualifier. Beyond that race, where should I start? I can ride 5 days a week, no problem. For this type of event, what would you say is most important? Sweet spot, VO2, or threshold?
It's all important. It's just a question of, what has the best effect on your aerobic capabilities and elevates FTP. So this is a really broad question. I mean, you start the same place I'd recommend everybody else start, with base conditioning, and then work forward from there such that it times out that your peak fitness hits for this event. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to be spending a lot of time, even though there are climbs, you're going to be spending long days on the bike. That means that you're going to be far from, riding or spending any extended period of time at VO2 or above threshold.
This is what Jonathan said too, is for your Everest thing, you're at such a low percentage of FTP, it's all aerobic. And you felt like if you fueled, you can go for a long time. That's how these people do Ram.
Yep.
And so to go faster, you want a higher FTP so that you have a higher, that percentage of it is higher aerobically. And you're going to want to do some longer rides, if not just for my neck hurts thinking about it, but just sitting on the bike for that long, but also.
But the idea being your muscles. The higher your FTP is, the higher your all day pace is.
Exactly.
Falls at a percentage.
And like we mentioned, I was able to maintain 0.5, and I felt like, honestly, other than the fact that I was wet and cold and everything else, I could have, if I had food and water, I could have kept going.
Yeah, you could almost literally go forever.
Yeah,
really. That's how those people do the huge, happens all the time. People run across Africa or something, or race across America. It's because they're...
Yeah, really, then you're just battling the desire to sleep.
Exactly, yeah.
Need to sleep.
It's mental, and then the physical discomfort of just sitting there.
Right.
Like, I don't like sitting in my chair for like 4 hours, unless a bike. Like, and we have these nice Aaron Miller, Herman Miller Aeron chairs.
So I guess the temptation, Crockett, may think that you just need to do a lot of long rides at a low intensity because that's what you'll be doing on race day. But in this case, having a high threshold is going to benefit you massively.
Big aerobic base. How you get it is up to you to determine.
Yeah. Go back to the beginning of this podcast to cover that. So, final question from Derek. He says, so I've worked incredibly hard over the last year to get fitter and faster. I've known for some time that I've got a torn meniscus and have elected to have it repaired this winter. The doctor informed me that it would be approximately 4 weeks until I get back to full strength. That's quick, but I guess meniscus tears can be taken care of pretty easily. Mm-hmm. My goal is to get back on the bike, but one quick thing, don't be discouraged, Derek. If you don't feel ready coming back after that, then certainly don't rush things. My goal is to get back on the bike as soon as cleared to, even though I may have to take it very easy at first. I know fitness is hard to gain and easy to lose, but how much fitness can one expect to lose over 4 weeks? Will it be like starting at square one again from a fitness standpoint? What do you say, Chad?
Yeah, I don't have good news for you, Derek. A 4-week layoff is going to come at a severe detriment to your aerobic fitness. That's just the nature of it. It's like typically 10 to 14 days is when you start to see the more precipitous decline. 4 weeks out, you might not necessarily be starting from scratch, but you're going to be starting from a substantially lower point. It just is what it is. There's nothing you can do about it. Just get back in there and know that the gains you see are probably going to be pretty rapid ones. You're already up at 292. I don't think it's going to take you a whole lot of time, assuming your knee can take it, and I don't see why not. before you're back up to that. So potentially discouraging, but don't let it get you down.
What about cross training for to maintain some of that aerobic fitness?
Yeah, you can. Absolutely. Anything that taxes that aerobic engine doesn't have to be with your legs. You know, you can do a number of things. Swimming comes to mind.
You can use one of the arm pedaling machines.
Yeah, elliptical machines, if you can do it. Swimming, yeah.
Pool running. I don't know. That might not work with the knee, though.
Punching a punching bag. I mean, something that revs you up and, you know, obviously is easy on your knees.
Just kidding.
Which, by the way, we should be clear. It's not that we dislike CrossFit. We just know how much of a hot button CrossFit issue it is. So
I like to, yeah, it's, I'm trolling everybody.
Yeah.
So one thing my wife did, she just had a problem with her leg running and she took time off, and then she switched to, she couldn't run, but she didn't have any pain cycling, and she went great. She's a crazy person, but she went in and she's been averaging 500 TSS a week for like 6 weeks.
Pretty awesome.
From Trainer Road.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's good. Yeah. So she's getting, I did some outside ride with her and she's, I was like, was that hard for you? She's like, I started to breathe out of my mouth at the end. And I was like, well, I need to push you harder. Anyways, she just came back to running. She did like a 16 mile run, 8:16 pace. Easy for her. She was very surprised. She really didn't lose much fitness at all. I think that was her fourth or fifth run back. The first one was slower, but after a few runs, she got back up to it. But she was totally working her aerobic system, and she had a really good aerobic base before that. Mm-hmm. But she didn't just give up too and say, oh, I'm just going to sit here. She cross-trained to try to maintain her fitness.
Mm. Yeah, that makes sense.
I can definitely mitigate that
Mitigate that loss. Is the right word, right?
Yeah.
Because you're not going to be, she's not going to do all that cycling training and then realize she's an even better runner.
Yeah, and don't think of 292, because you mentioned your FTP to us, like Chad said, 292. Don't think of 292 as the starting point. Think of wherever you start at after this is the starting point. Like, it's not fair to yourself to hold yourself to the standard that you had before after this surgery.
So I just had that surgery, my sinus surgery.
Yeah,
and I think was it 4 weeks off? I think it was 4 weeks. Yeah. And I went from 295 to 265.
Yeah.
And then it was like maybe another 3 months and I got back up to 295,
yeah,
which is, that's like 4 months of the summer prime time. It was hard. I mean, it was hard.
It's a bummer, but yeah, it happens. It's just one of many potential setbacks you will encounter.
Yeah. And if you need some mental reframing, try that. Just think, nope, this is my new baseline. I'm starting from here. I'm not starting from where I was. At least that always helps me if I'm coming back from something. So thanks for the question, Derek, and everybody else. Remember, you can submit those questions at trainerroad.com/podcast. You can use the hashtag AskTrainerRoad on the different social platforms you use. You can find us on Snapchat at TrainerRoad, and you can ask your quick questions there, and we'll get to those. Thanks for listening, everybody. Leave us a review, too, if you haven't already, and we'll chat with you next week.
A good review.
A good review. Yeah, we'll chat with you all next week.
Thanks, everybody.
Bye-bye.